I'm Joanne Wilson, and this is Positively Gotham Gal. Small, meaningful conversations with women entrepreneurs about their approach to life, business, and everything in between. Jessica Coslow is the owner, visionary, and chef, and everything else behind Squirrel, one of LA's most popular cafes that started with the Jam Company and led to a cookbook, and they've had a pop-up venture in New York City, and soon enough, a much-anticipated second location on LA's West Side. Jessica and I sat down and talked a lot about a question that comes up for many entrepreneurs. How do you make that big leap out of security into starting your own business?
So you came on the scene with a jelly, you know, out of nowhere.
It's true.
It's like a jelly.
It's really humbling to say that too.
I mean, it's pretty amazing, yeah. You know, and then like everyone's Squirrel, Squirrel, Squirrel. Have you been to Squirrel? You know, have you seen the lines at Squirrel? And it's just like, who is this girl? Like, let's go back. Like, where did you grow up?
I grew up here. I grew up in Southern California in Long Beach, California. And I grew up figure skating since the age of 5.
So did you like I, Tonya?
I loved I, Tonya.
So did I.
I was like, did they superimpose Margot Robbie's face onto Tonya's body? Probably. Or someone else's body. But it did also brought me back to that point.
And figure skating in Southern California.
So actually, some of the best figure skaters in the world or in the United States are from Southern California.
Who knew? Okay.
Because this is a place that you do it because it's a sport and you want to win, not because it's a pastime. So if you're into figure skating, you're into it because you're deep in.
Okay. And how long did you keep that going for?
I mean, I was skating until I was in college. I was on the U.S. team for 4 years.
Wow.
And I never really understood what food was during that time. It was for fuel. It wasn't to explore.
So it was a very different passion.
Exactly.
Yeah, it kept you going. Yeah. Just on a complete sidebar, being in something that is a very structured, female-oriented sport that mm-hmm. you were in, not that there's not men in figure skating, have you, of course, been watching this whole gymnastics thing that's rolled out?
You mean with the doctor? With the
yeah.
Physician? Yeah.
How crazy.
How sad.
Beyond sad and all the people that were held accountable and did nothing about it.
Yeah. I mean, what's also interesting is with figure skating, we never had a doctor. There was never, and again, because I was on the U.S. team, there were, I mean, things
you were injured,
hoops that we had
right.
to go to, but there was never like a specific physician. Maybe it's different now, but I can't even imagine that happening in our sport, but
that's interesting.
In gymnastics, to have that happen is appalling and sad. And,
and beyond.
I have been watching it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you know, today he got.
Did he get life? I mean, he's never.
175 years.
Yeah. He's never seen the light of day.
No, ever again. Yeah. He doesn't deserve to see the light of day. He actually deserves worse than that.
Yeah, he does. I feel like the judicial system frowns upon death these days. So,
yes,
you know,
yes.
But I'm sure the rest of his life in prison is pretty much like death.
Yeah, I think that actually is a better way than death. So go back. So figure skating all the way through high school.
Yeah, all the way through high school, some of college. And
where'd you go to college?
I went to undergraduate in Brandeis.
Okay.
Brandeis in Massachusetts.
In Massachusetts, right.
So moved across country. And
much colder there.
Very, very cold. And I was skating there as well. And then stopped. And once I finally stopped, I started.
And why did you stop?
Well, I think two things. One is that I did a sport that no longer exists in the world. It's called school figures, and they're intricate figure eight patterns in the ice. And I won nationals, and I won the last U.S. competition in the world at the time. I think they've kind of brought it back to life, but it's really more of a pastime now. So that was like 2000.
Okay.
And once that ended, that focus had to be put into something else, and that was food.
And were you contemplating your plan B at that point, or had that been in the works somehow at all?
No, you know, when you're like 20, plan B is plan A.
You know? Right. It's just an evolution.
And I still think I'm going through the, wow, have I really thought about a plan B? Now I really need to think about like plan B, plan C. What does that look like? But maybe I'm still 20 inside.
I think we all are, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah.
As someone who's much older than you. So you skating ended.
Mm-hmm. And I met a friend in Massachusetts who owns a cranberry farm. And we would go out to Carver, Mass, and see the bog. And
Massachusetts.
So Massachusetts. But it was really this, it was a beautiful moment of seeing what I could do or explore outside of the world of what I thought was my future. And I always, also my mom is a single mother. She's a physician, and she always was very strongly in favor of higher education. And so because of that, that was a really a plan B. That was the back end was, look, as much as you're figure skating, your schooling is just as important, if not more so. So get in there and get to crack. And
nice Jewish mother.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Nice Jewish mother.
Exactly. And so was your mom a cook? Was she into cooking?
No. It was like the opposite. My mom like burned steaks and potatoes are really overly salted. And, you know, like the thing that she's really great at was tapioca pudding from a box.
Okay.
And,
it works.
Corned beef that came out of a bag. But everything else was like, keep it away.
That's hilarious. Yeah. And so you saw these cranberries.
Yeah. I mean, it's not so much that. The cranberries might be a metaphor for the change of my life, you know, and starting to really dig into food systems and exploring what food was for me.
And is that how you went about it in terms of educating yourself? You know, what is food? Mm-hmm. How is it healthy?
And also just what does it mean to be food from Massachusetts? What does it mean to be food from California? As I kept coming back here to go to school or after Massachusetts, I moved to DC and then to Atlanta. And you know, I went a number of places in the United States.
And did you work in restaurants along the way?
Yeah, I did. After grad school, I was in grad school in D.C. and I moved to Atlanta.
What was your grad school?
It was this media theory. I went to Georgetown and I did media theory.
And climbed the steps.
I climbed a lot of steps. Yeah. And I felt really out of place in D.C. because it's so political.
It's a weird place. Yeah. I mean, I grew up outside of D.C.
I see.
So then you left?
I left Georgetown. I moved to Atlanta. And once I got to Atlanta, I said, I'm out. I've been kind of under the mom thumb, kind of doing the path that I thought I was supposed to take.
If you were going to be in the food world.
If I was going to be an academic.
Okay. You know? You went after the academia originally.
Yeah. And then afterwards, I started cooking in kitchens. And my mom was like, I put you through higher education. I'm giving her an accent she really doesn't have, by the way. But, you know, like the mom, like I've given my life to put you through schooling.
And you're in
kitchens. This is how you're repaying me a $10 an hour job working as a pastry cook. And I couldn't have been happier.
But at the end of the day, that's what everybody's mothers wants. I just want your kids to be happy.
Right. Right. But I don't know. My mom wants to show me around.
She's in not a bad job there.
Yeah. Now she can.
Yeah, now she can.
Now she can. Now the whole thing was, you know, I believed in you the whole way. And I'm like, maybe. But underneath it all, I think she's just worried.
Yeah.
She was worried about, look, this is a path of unknown. This is a challenging future for you. What is your next step? Mm-hmm. How are you going to make this climb from being a $10 an hour pastry cook to maybe having something that is your own? And I felt like I needed to be honest and let those things evolve. I needed to figure out how to develop the idea and what was really passionate for me and turn that into a tangible
thing.
Yeah.
And was your mother entrepreneurial?
I mean, she's a dermatologist. She has two offices.
So she
I would say so. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And your father, do you have a relationship with him?
I don't have a relationship with him. And I would say he's probably not entrepreneurial.
Okay.
I'm more interested in his family. His parents had grocery stores in Richmond, Virginia called Coslow's. And they also, my grandfather was the head of Rich Foods. So he did all of like the canning and packaging.
Yeah.
And they always said, don't get into this business.
That's very funny.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, there's so many people in the Chinese food business that are the second generation of Chinese food restaurant owners that have been told the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what you see is what you end up being.
And what's so funny is it almost skips a generation because my father, my aunt, they see how hard my grandparents worked.
Oh, I'm sure.
And how maybe they weren't home all the time or the struggle of just the operations. And so they're like, I'm out. I'm not, that is definitely not my path. But I'm like, wait a minute. That's beautiful.
Right. That looks great.
Yeah.
That looks phenomenal. So was LA in the forecast or you just, you know, threw out a dart and that's where you ended up?
It was New York next. And okay. New York was, I got scared. I left food and I got a job at Fox as a digital producer.
Okay.
And worked on every American Idol and So You Think You Can Dance and 24. And it was just something totally else. I don't know how this landed on my plate. My background of academics and a little luck landed me at News Corp. So I got my job transferred out to LA after a couple years in New York. And the job kept me here, or I was working on the offices here. And then I started cooking again at night. So I was baking at night for this place called the Village Bakery, and I was doing their midnight shift from midnight to 8 a.m., go home and sleep a couple hours, and then I would end up at the Fox lot.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was obviously not going to work forever.
It wasn't, but you obviously had this insane passion for cooking, yeah. or you wouldn't have beaten the hell out of your body yeah. like that.
And I also think that there is – I know how many people are dealing with this moment of, okay, I'm in a role that pays me really well. I have benefits, maybe mm-hmm. I have healthcare, mm-hmm. but this isn't what I want to do, or I know there's something more for me.
Oh, yes.
I know so many of these, I mean, I have so many friends in this boat who are like, how do you make that leap out of security?
It's hard.
It is hard.
It's hard to dive into the, you know, into the pool head first.
Yeah.
It also, I see people who are like, I paid off my student debts. And I'm just going to go and do what it is I'm passionate about for a while. I mean, you know, this whole concept of, you know, 50 is the new 30 or 40 is the new 20. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's bullshit. I mean, because at the end of the day, we are still at that age. And there's a point where you start to have a mortgage, you get married, you start to have children. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can't afford to just, you know, not pay the rent.
Exactly.
Or put food on the table.
Yeah.
And so there is a point where I think that we become more creative and there's more opportunities and, you know, you get up every day, you should love what you do.
Yeah. And that was a moment where once I left Fox, I paid, even when I started Squirrel and I started the Jam Company, I paid myself $500 a month for about a year and a half. I had saved enough money that I at least wanted to give myself a salary to make myself feel that it was worthwhile, that I was taking that leap into this thing. But there was a...
That's great advice, by the way.
Yeah, I think so. You
it's
should
great
feel
advice.
Valued by yourself.
Yes.
Even if it's $500.
It doesn't make any difference. It's I'm getting paid for my value.
Mm-hmm.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sometimes founders spend years, don't make
like,
a penny.
Or they just put it all back in the company. And even today, I still, all the checks that come in, even if they're for me or an appearance or something I'm doing, it all goes into Squirrel. I own it 100%. I don't
right.
have any investors there. And I see it somehow, you know.
Right.
But I think giving yourself a value when you go, when you start, it's really important to keep your morale up about what you're doing.
I totally agree. I think that's amazing. Yeah. So, you know, here you were working basically 20 hours a day mm-hmm. and sleeping four, mm-hmm. maybe.
There's definitely some like, is that a rainbow?
And so at what point did you say, okay, when I walk in this week on Friday, I'm resigning and here's where I'm going.
Well, it was actually the other way around where I was let go. And the reason why.
Well, that actually makes life easier.
But that way, it was also this time where it was 2010.
Okay.
And it was the height of the recession.
Oh, yes.
And Fox had gone through three layoffs and they were like going through their fourth. And so it was basically the entire office shuttered afterwards. I have a friend that just left her post at New York Magazine. And I'm like, God, good for you that you just made that decision to leave.
Golden handcuffs are tough.
They are tough.
They are
so
very tough.
So having them sawed off was really the best thing that happened to me.
And I had the same experience. I was fired. And then I was like, I'm never returning to that industry. Yeah. I was like, I'm never going back.
Yeah.
Because it sent me on a completely different trajectory. So
Boxed
you a solid.
They did me a solid. And what's so funny is my manager, she loved me. I love her. I knew that this was like a decision that was based around pure financial cuts. And even today, like there'll be something that happens on Facebook. She'll be like, I'm so proud of you. You know,
that's great.
You know that it was the right thing.
Right. It had to get done. So you were here. You were laid off.
I was laid off. And I just was like, all right, well, thanks for making that decision. And I'm just going to go cook. So I cooked. I moved to Australia. I started, I was staging in Australia at a place called Dench.
Okay.
And then I came back.
And where is that? Was that in Sydney? Melbourne?
Melbourne.
Melbourne. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, that you say Australia because your food is very reminiscent of Australian food.
We have so many Aussies that come in.
It doesn't surprise me. And we were down there years ago. But there's something about your food that is very clean and healthy and interesting flavor palettes that to me remind me of Australia.
To the States, like daytime eating wasn't really a thing. You know, we were kind of stuck in the same like hollandaise pancakes, French toast. But when I got to Australia, I was like, wow, everyone's really about like vibrant all day eatings and hangs. I was like, this is a different scenario than in the States. It was in the back of my mind as, all right, there's so many parallels to California, whether it's the lights,
for sure.
The produce, some of the produce.
The sky.
The sky, the sun.
Yeah.
It did impact how I was like, wow, there's all these places that are like the local. Where's the local here? And at the time when I opened, I opened the cafe in 2012.
Okay.
The local didn't really exist. It was a corporate coffee shop called Intelligentsia in Silver Lake. And also
Silver Lake was just starting to become a mecca for new living.
It's true. I mean, I dug a hole from Greenpoint where I was living and I popped up in Silver Lake.
So you opened up, you found this place, which is the tiniest little spot.
I know.
It is. And you also didn't make it that you're going to have this full-on restaurant with tons of people to sit. It was sit on the corner, sit out on the bench. If you're lucky, you can grab the 3 or 4 stools that are available here.
It's true.
And you come in, you get your food, and you hang out with, you know, out on the streets.
Yeah, it was, it's 800 square feet inside. It's probably 1,000 square feet all in. I found it on Craigslist. It was $10,000 to buy out the business, and it was $2,500 a month for rent.
Which is amazing.
It's amazing and also terrifying.
You're like,
how can I afford this? You know, I was just making jams at the time. And in my head, I was saying, look, I'm 7 minutes from my home to work. That is a quality of life that is hard to find in Los Angeles. To find a place that's close to home that you can live your life and be in the restaurant industry is pretty rare.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take it. And at first, my first accountant said, look, by the end of the year, you're going to be done. You're not going to make it.
How uplifting.
I know. Maybe it wasn't like that. Maybe I'm giving her like the dark, like that dark
accounting side to her. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was definitely a moment of, okay, doing this beautiful product of jam is not enough. As many classes as I taught, as many relationships that I won over within my community of farmers and chefs, it wasn't enough.
Right.
And so at that point in 2012, I knew that I needed to figure out how to evolve. And I also think a scary thing or an interesting thing is that having the jar allows you to hide behind your product. Like I didn't have to be on Yelp. I didn't have to be out in the open talking to people, having people walk through the door and give you an automatic judgment. I mean, that is what everyone does these days. And you have to be ready to be a 4, 3-star, 2-star, you know?
Yes, yes. But you also did something else a lot of women don't do and they should do is you didn't call it by your name. Because
call
you
call me by
you know,
your name, I'll call you by mine.
Exactly. Because you called it Squirrel.
Yeah.
And you can sell Squirrel. Mm-hmm. Like the woman behind Tate's, the cookies.
The cookies, yeah.
Her story is she originally was called, hers her name. And she had these terrible investors and they completely hosed her, but she had owned the building and the whole thing crumbled, no pun intended. Mm-hmm. And she came back and she put the name Tate's. And she said, it was literally just a complete game changer in my mind because my name wasn't on that door anymore. It was Tate's. It was like this company. It was mine, but it was this different
other
kind
thing.
Of an umbrella. Yeah.
I think there's something powerful in figuring out why you name something, what you do.
And how'd you come up with Squirrel?
Squirrel is squirreling things away is an old time preserving term. And it's a girl who's squirreling.
Okay.
So the spelling is a little off. The other backstory is that my...
Which is the ingenious, by the way, the whole thing.
Yeah, because then, you know, you get a lot of jokes. I'm like, oh, I love squirrel. Is there a squirrel in here? And you're like, oh, God, I can't. But it does take it away from the animal and kind of puts it into an action.
Completely.
And that was good, even for the cafe as something that is preserving California produce and fermenting California produce and being a part of this community. It feels like the right name for the cafe.
And so you went from the jams, you opened the cafe, and how soon did you become profitable?
The cafe became profitable by May of 2013. So when I opened the cafe, I had a partner. The guys who have Go Get 'Em Tiger were doing the coffee in the front, and then they left in May. And I took over the entire thing.
And boom.
Yeah. Right. And I think they're, you know, now they have a number of places and they're profitable as well. But we needed each other to kind of get our ideas about who we are, what we wanted behind us.
Right.
And actually, it was a really great, I think it's hard to have a partner in a space like that.
I think it's very hard.
So many different ideas about like how to operate, especially how to be welcoming to people. Like your idea of front of house service might be very different than someone who only has done like cafe culture. So as someone who worked in fine dining, I know and respect and expect a certain level of service versus kind of what I was getting when it was this thing. But it was a very beautiful time of growth that even like the customers who are still come in, like they revel in that moment.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that for anyone, being in a space with multiple partners is very, very difficult. And we're going to see more of that because,
And it's something that I just, that's why I've turned down any kind of like Grand Central Market or it's hard.
Not what you, it is very hard. And, you know, the retail brick and mortar spaces are becoming much more difficult to draw in a customer. And so how do you become something that is concept oriented, that is curated with a variety of brands versus one so that people are continuing to come? You know, food always draws, right? People got to eat.
Right.
People don't have to shop.
It's true. Although, man, I went to Juicy today. I got like two side salads. And I love Travis and I think his food is really clean and classic, and I know where it comes from. And it's one of the very few restaurants that I go to in Los Angeles because I trust it. But it was $15 for like these two scoops of side salad. And I was like, this is also a challenge, is how do we feed people in the future at a price that brings people in?
Well, you know, we can look at which is the one, is it local, that they charge different prices in Beverly Hills and they charge in, you know, East L.A.?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Hmm. It's a fast dine, you know, it's like fast casual. And I love that.
I love that too.
Because
that's great.
That speaks to my social side, which is, you know, we know
your clientele.
Know your clientele and understand if your rent is going to be $1,000 in East LA and $5,000 a month in Beverly Hills, then you can serve the same product, but the prices should be accordingly to the audience so that everybody can have healthy food. You know,
interesting.
Which is an interesting platform.
I like that.
Yeah.
So I want to know what that place is because I don't know what
I'll look
I'm like,
up
I need to go there tomorrow.
Remember, it's super, it's great. And I remember reading about it. They just raised money and I reached out to him because I had written about him and he emailed me. And said, thank you so much. I said, listen, I love what you're doing. I mean, to me, that's a brand new paradigm. And I think it's really intelligent.
Yeah.
And then they're raising money, but he's out of my price range. But I said, you know, I only wish you success because to me, that makes us more of a community build as, you know, I had our kids in the school.
Because people in East LA can also afford to eat it.
Exactly.
And they can experience what people in Beverly Hills are eating.
And they can experience healthy, good food. Yeah. You know, I think that's really important. So Squirrel's now been open for...
I mean, Squirrel started in 2011 in March.
Right.
So we're coming up on 7 years.
7 years. And in between, you wrote a cookbook.
I did. Yeah. And I have another one coming out next year.
And you sell your products, your consumer products, your jams to... I mean, I've seen them all over the place. So you have really two separate businesses.
Yeah, I do.
Are you making all the jams here still?
We do.
That's
great. We
still
make them all. So we control that product from start to finish. I think it would be interesting to have a smaller line that we co-pack that's for hotels and restaurants.
Right. But you need to Well, that's a different. Well, that's a different story, level. Right? It's a different level and a and different that's business.
So, you know, people are always like, why don't you do the small jars? And you're like, it's another layer.
Yeah, it is another layer.
And every layer takes a little time.
And every layer needs people that are attentive to it 24/7.
Yeah,
so you can't just have the same people do the same thing. Yeah. You need to bring in another person to oversee that, or it ends up not what you want it to be.
Yeah.
So that's a whole thing too.
So recently we've taken over the entire building.
Right.
At Squirrel. So instead of just having 800 square feet, we have 5,000 now.
Which is a huge difference.
Which is a huge difference.
Right. But, I have to go back down and take a look.
Yeah. But that's why. And I don't know if the last time you were there, I had the next door space.
You were talking to me that you're about to literally sign that week on the next door space.
Well, it's been a while since you've been over.
Yeah.
That's been, but now we're doing Squirrel Away.
So that's great.
Next to Squirrel is Squirrel Away, which is more of a like convenience takeout.
Okay.
Everything's pre-done. But, you know, we started small with what we could afford, and since then we've evolved, and it's kind of been amazing to see that evolution of what Squirrel is.
Which is amazing. And what's really amazing is you still own 100% of your business.
It's true.
And I think when we spoke, you were also talking to a variety of people that wanted to partner with you.
For the next project. And I think also because of Squirrel Away, at the time I didn't have enough finances to build out Squirrel mm-hmm. Away, the second iteration. But now, since I've waited a couple years and gained the entire lower level of the building, I'm good.
You're good. That's great.
Yeah.
And there will be
so
more.
Time.
I mean, you know.
If you've got time, then
I think that most people don't think about that, right? I mean, I've known so many founders that 5 or 6 years in, you know, all of a sudden, boom. And these things don't happen overnight. And when you own them by yourselves and you take time to build the platform, mm-hmm. which you've done, you know, going to the next level certainly is difficult. But because you own it, you have a very different conversation with the people that want to be involved with you.
I have a lot of friends who are also incredible female entrepreneurs, and male entrepreneurs as well. And every start January, they do kind of a lay of the land for their year plan or 5-year plan. And that's something that I don't do. I have this idea about where I want to go, but I don't do that component of the work. And I wonder, maybe this would have happened a lot sooner if I had taken the leap, you know, would have, could have. But.
Yeah, but you're here you are.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a wonderful profitable business. You're looking to grow, you know, in a new area in LA. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have jams on shelves. You have a cookbook. You're in magazines. And anyone that's in the food world knows who you are and knows what you've done with that restaurant. And in many ways, what you've done is what a lot of the people that you talked about earlier that aren't happy in their business life and really want to do something.
Yeah.
You know, the romantic vision is to do what you've done.
Yeah. Also, my industry, people tend to push to, oh, I have to open something else. I have to open. What's my next thing?
Yes, they do. And that's a big mistake.
And it is a big mistake. There are a lot of people that I really love. And I'm like, man, you moved so fast to find that next location. And, you know, why are you like fish sandwiches on the pier? Really? You can do better.
Well, that's interesting because I think that in the end, most of them end up dying because of that.
Mm.
And the amount of people that have come in and talked to me about their businesses were like, wait a second. Okay, you're profitable. You're building a nice business. Why are you raising money exactly? Mm. Because this isn't a $1 billion idea. You know, maybe it's a $5 or $10 or $50 million idea. So why don't you just grow it? Because no one else is doing what you're doing. And you're just like, oh, people have said that. It's like, you don't want to deal with investors.
Yeah.
You don't have to. Anyway, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I mean, it's really amazing what you've done.
Thanks.
You know, all starting with the jam.
The jelly.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
Our thanks to Jessica for joining us on the podcast today. You can check out Squirrel by visiting them in Silver Lake or going to their website at squirrella.com. And by the way, it is SQIRLLA.com. As always, thank you for joining us this week, and make sure to subscribe to Positively Gotham Gal on iTunes or SoundCloud so you do not miss a minute. Until next time.